All right, folks, welcome back. Yankees Unloaded. My guy Gary Jr. is back here. Missed you, man. I don't like doing solo stuff. I feel guilty doing them, but also like they don't do as well as when we do our thing. So it's just, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, I think the thing about our show is it's us. We always want to get content out for people because we know people are going to be starving for content after a doubleheader win and whatnot. But Gary, you had quite the time moving, my friend, and I will be joining you in 2 weeks. Luckily, it won't be as bad. Hopefully, it won't be as bad. But yeah, how'd that go?
I don't know if you can tell on screen, but I am absolutely zapped, completely torched, and I don't mean high or drunk. I mean, I have no energy whatsoever, and the only thing that can get me off the mat is this 3-1 loss from the Yankees. And I felt like it was a perfect time to come out and have a conversation, because I think that, at least to echo what you just said, I don't think anybody likes making solo content. I mean, solo content is it's like a PowerPoint presentation. I mean, it's not easy. And depending on what you're talking about, like, yeah, if the Yankees win 10-2, solo presentations get really fun. But it's me and you can sit around and dive deep into what happened on the field in a 10-1 loss. I mean, we did it multiple times this year, got really good turnout. But part of that is because we have this one-on-one dynamic that we can work out. But this performance was so, I would just say it was a bad watch, in my opinion. I didn't feel like, and I agreed with what you just said off air, which was that you didn't believe that the Toronto Blue Jays really played that well today. They didn't really do much. And I can't really disagree with that. It feels like it was just a goose egg for both teams, four hits apiece. There really wasn't many great at bats. Heel pretty much couldn't throw strikes the whole game. His body language was atrocious. And I think starting with Heel, there was something was up. I didn't know what it was. You know, it always could be release. Who knows what it could have been. So, yeah, I think my whole takeaway of this game was I want to also credit Boone for leaving Heel in the game because he did burn us some innings. I mean, shoot, we don't get that. We don't get that last year, right? I mean, Heel is out in the first inning last year. So
I know.
Credit to Heel for sticking with it. He had no stuff at all. And yeah, it was a tough one today.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, let's start off with that. Heel pitching 5, his longest outing of the year, which is so bizarre. 7 walks, 6 strikeouts, 3 earned runs. I know, really bizarre. 3 hits. How about Marinaccio bouncing back in this one? You know, I thought he pitched really well. If you told me, I know. If you told me, man, that going into, say, the second inning, because it was the first inning where he like couldn't find the zone. If you told me with all those walks with Luis Heel, actually, I think it was the second inning, that they were only going to have 3 pitchers utilized, only 2 bullpen pitchers used, I would have said there's no way.
No shot.
You know, that's the impressive thing. Also, to be fair, it's what happens when you play, you know, on the road against a team that's winning going into the ninth. You only have to, you know, field 8 innings. But Santana, once again, looked pretty good. You know, at the end of the game, he gave him a chance. The offense was really atrocious. I mean, for the most part, you know, it just wasn't a good day. Only 2 walks at the dish. I mean, you know, you look at the Blue Jays forcing 8. That looked more like Yankees baseball that we've seen.
Oh, dude, first off, if Toronto's walking 8 times, you didn't pitch worth a damn. Let's be clear. Toronto's a free swinging offense. I think that's a fair way to describe this offense. They want to put the ball in the seats. They want to put the ball in play. You see with Bichette, you see with Guerrero. I mean, Guerrero swung at a pitch that was almost in Scottsdale, and he swung at it today for strike 3. So, and that's no knock on Vladdy. Very good player. Obviously, plate discipline can get out of whack at times, but he usually can eventually hone that in. Today, it was atrocious. And I can tell you right now, they said it on the broadcast early. I'll mention it again today. That Blue Jays bullpen is not good.
No.
We laid down immediately. The second those guys got out there, not a hit, not a walk, nothing. We didn't do anything to get on base against those relievers. if you allow the bullpen, that is a bullpen that is not good, to pitch essentially three full innings of perfect baseball against you, that's not the Yankees' way. It was an off day, not a good performance. I expect better tomorrow.
Yeah. Grisham has not gotten a hit this year. Has a zero batting average in 10 plate appearances. He had a walk, but man, didn't it feel like they missed Stanton today? Like, it was funny when I think it was the ninth inning going into it. You know, they have that little promo before they go to commercial. We'll be right back. It was funny. Like, the way Michael Kay said it, it was, and I'm pretty sure Aaron Boone has the three guys that he would want the most, Soto, Judge, and Rizzo. And I was like, wait a minute, one guy's not like all the others. And look, I'm not hating on Rizzo. I would have rather had Stanton. I'm not saying to pinch hit, but it just felt weird today not having Stanton. And I'm glad we're talking it like that now. I'm glad we're in that position where it's like, man, I wish Stanton was out there. Because it wasn't that long ago where you and I were like, yeah, this might be the end of the road for Stanton. And I felt like they missed that power in this type of game. I mean, you know, I'm not saying he's 100%. Yeah, I'm not saying he's 100% hitting a home run. But in a game where you only have four and they only have four in the hit column, having that type of power might have helped. You know, and I think he's been really doing a nice job this, you know, lately, working counts, getting the pitch to hit, even if he has to leg out a single, which he did, you know, yesterday. Austin Wells continues to be the most unlucky hitter. Every time I watch him, I'm like, dude, this is painful. And you could see him. They were making fun of him on the broadcast when Rousen's going over the thing with Rizzo, and they're like, Wells is just like completely dumbfounded. He was just like,
yeah. And I guess the main thing for Wells is that not to lose confidence.
Yeah.
And again, and I said this a couple episodes ago,
Flaherty was saying, who ironically was a hitting catcher.
Yeah. And you don't want to lose confidence. But at the same time, I did say that I believe that Trevino at no point long term should beat out Wells for this job. So at the very least, he should feel good about that. So yeah, does it suck to be hitting a .103 and for people? And there are a lot of baseball fans, and it doesn't mean they're a bad fan. We have busy lives. There's a lot of fans that don't know Wells is hitting a .103 right now. It's early, but you all of a sudden you get to All-Star break, you're going to see Wells' batting average. You're going to say, oh, he's hitting a .95 or he's hitting .220. You think he just never got that bat going, but the context of the way he's been making contact this first month of the season, he's been hitting the ball very hard. He's been flying out to the track pretty much every game he plays.
So,
and it just hasn't worked out. Now, will that come back to earth? Absolutely. I think that eventually, once he sees a few fall, well, you know, who knows? Maybe the baseball gods will give us a break. So, but yeah, as far as Wells, not worried about him at all. I mean, there's not a ton of competition. You've got a catcher who's a excellent framer, can't really hit a lick. I know he hit a home run. Sterling's last, you mentioned it before, Sterling's last call for a home run, which is despicable, by the way.
At least his last call at Yankee Stadium was that Giancarlo bomb down the left field line.
That was cool.
He hit the grand slam. So that's his last call at Yankee Stadium. I'll hold on to that.
We'll just burn the tapes of the other one.
Roger Goodell.
I'm never going to talk about that. Are you? I'm not talking about it. I mean, I tell you right now, in 5 years, I'm not going to be talking about Trevino and pinstripes. So, you know, with all due respect.
Yeah.
But, but overall, I just think that this just seemed like a lay down performance. We seemed like we were guessing. You saw Judge's at bat. Judge's at bat stood out to me down the stretch in this game. He was throwing the comeback fastball, which is really a sinker two seam. And then he has the slider. You saw Judge essentially swing at it as if he was looking at a slider, and it was a sinker. And that was just kind of the way the Yankees were playing today. It seemed like they were guessing, didn't really have a consistent approach. And it's unfortunate, but if you watch enough baseball, which we do as podcasters, it's our job to watch these games. And if you watch enough of these games, there are going to be games like this for every organization. It just happens, unfortunately. But as long as your habits long term are good, we as Yankees Unloaded, you know, podcasters and viewers, we have nothing to worry about. So I just think that once we see Stanton back in the lineup, he'll never be that Buns again. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. So, yeah, I think this is one of those games where you just chalk it up to, you know, that game just sucked.
It's just baseball. But, yeah, it was soul-sucking. You didn't mention that. That was my big thing. Because you know when something happens and you just have an exact analogy for it, that's how you know, like, okay. Like, I knew exactly. While I'm watching this, I'm thinking of, if you know Harry Potter, I'm thinking of the freaking Dementors, like, eating my face. Like, that's how I felt. Like, I felt like it was soul-sucking. Like, you know, it was just like, at no point, and the worst thing is, it wasn't like a 7-0 loss to the Diamondbacks, which was their worst game of the year, let's be fair.
I was at that game.
It was a tease. So really at no point did you think, even though it was only 3-1, that they were going to come back. They had some opportunities. They got runners on. They could not do anything. Just a tough day. I got to give a lot of credit to Bassett, though. I think in a game where not many did much of anything, and I'm not really a fan of Kirk, but I got to give him his props because he's the only one who scored a normal run with the double. In a game like this, I thought Bassett was great. I'm just going to say it. I thought he had great command. I thought he was really efficient. Just a really quality outing for him. And it almost seems unfair that he only got 3 runs of run support. Like, this was almost like, because he's the only one that I think really played well today, aside from maybe Kirk. And I mean, you could say Cabrera, you know, knocking in that run, the only run of the day for the Yankees. But yeah, I thought Chris Bassett looked really good.
You know, believe it or not, a lack of run support, in my opinion, and this is just an opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lack of run support over the course of a season in some way reflects confidence from a team, because they sometimes feel like they can be lax when you perform. And I felt this way a lot of times when Jordan Montgomery was pitching for us. I felt like his floor was pretty high. Everyone had a pretty good understanding of what to expect on a day in and day out basis. Gerrit Cole, same thing. We don't usually go out there and score 10, 12 runs when Gerrit Cole's on the mound. But, you know, I mean, it's just the way it goes. So sometimes the way it works out, you don't get run support. I mean, and maybe that's sort of a good thing. I mean, of course, you want 10 runs for your best pitchers, but you saw with Jacob deGrom with the Mets, and then all of a sudden their 2-starter would go out there and now they can score, right? So, yeah, I just think that, to your point, he was the best performer on the field today. No one else showed up. Soto, Judge, nobody. Nobody remembered that baseball was played today except for Bassett.
Yeah, I think Volpe, he always has this approach at the plate where
his outs are hard
about him. Yeah, he makes everything tough. I gotta give Heel a lot of credit. I mean, normally guys will just lay down, but you know, he faced adversity head on. I thought he did a nice job of staying in there, because at the point of him, the entire rest of the game, when you've already, you know, given up those runs via the wild pitch and the, you know, walking the bases loaded, walking in a run, at that point, you have to keep your composure so they could use you now effectively to take the load off the bullpen. And I think that's, you know, all you can really do in that spot. And I thought Flaherty, you know, said it the best. I mean, he came out with, you know, they're down 3-1. He gave them an opportunity. If you can't score 4 runs, you don't deserve to win baseball games. I mean, it's really that simple. So,
you know what I love, you know, by the way? I loved this about Heel's start today. It's pretty rare that you see someone walk 7 guys and you say, well, what can possibly be taken away from that outing? But what I loved is this was very reminiscent of Gerrit Cole. And not that he was struggling. It was the fact that he was eliminating pitches because he knew he didn't have that pitch that day.
Yeah.
And when you watch Gerrit Cole pitch, every once in a while, not often, you're going to see him go 4-seam, change up. You're going to see some cutters, right? And then every once in a while, he'll ditch that cutter, he'll ditch the slider, and he'll go to the knuckle curve. And you always sit there and say, what makes him throw this today as opposed to any other day? Because he's clearly got 3+ pitches. He knows he essentially can command all those pitches. But if you watch early on in the game, if Gerrit Cole has no command with his slider, he'll ditch it. If he has no command with his changeup, he'll ditch it. Because why? He's not out there just to get better as a player. He's out there to keep his team in the game. And sometimes working on a pitch in the middle of the game is just not the way it goes. Like, that's not going to keep a team in the game. He was going strictly fastball changeup. They mentioned it on the broadcast. I thought it was an excellent point to bring up, because that decision to go with those two pitches and just be a two-pitch pitcher kept him alive and kept the Yankees in this game. Unfortunately, we didn't come back in the game, but at the very least, there's something to be taken away.
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, and this is why we break down losses and we break down wins, because you can learn something in any of those games. And, you know, I think we want to do a good job of, you know, at least being like, hey, you know, this and this, you know, this might not have been talked about. Let's cover this. This is on our minds. And, you know, we watch the games at the same time, but we pick up on different things and we can bring them to a table and have a discussion. Two things that concern me about this team. I want to be real about this, because I think they're right now, they're the best team in baseball, 12-5. I feel good about saying that, but they have two genuinely huge concerns that could cause them to not only not win the World Series like they could, right, but it could cause them to be an early exit in the postseason. Their defense, middle infield, is horrible right now. And not even just that, I'll say their first baseman, Anthony Rizzo, has 4 errors in 16 games, or 17 games, because he didn't get an error today. He had 4 in 92 last year, okay? They also grounded into double plays more than anybody in the league.
Okay.
So they have tons of errors.
And so that's your second concern, is the double plays.
Yeah, those are my two biggest concerns. I think those are two things where, you know, I feel like every year you're trying to figure out, in all sports, you know, baseball, football, NCAA, like March Madness, for instance, do they have a rim protector? Do they have outside shooting? Do they have perimeter defense? Do they have a guy that can be a slasher? Do they have a finisher? Those are like check boxes that you need to, like, you know, before you fill out your bracket, right? Finding the team that's going to win it all. I feel like baseball, you need a team that is, you know, defensively sound in the infield. Because runs are a premium in the postseason. It's amazing how you could have a team that scores 12 runs a game all year. They get to the postseason and 3-2 is going to be how you win games. And it just, in my mind, I can totally see a bad case scenario happening where Anthony Rizzo doesn't pick the ball when he needs to, like late in a game, and a run scores because of it. And now you just lost a game that you should have won. Or, you know, grounding into a double play. I mean, I mentioned it today on Twitter. It seems like the Yankees can't turn double plays, but they can ground into them. And it's so incredibly frustrating. I want to make mention, Flaherty mentioned how today the infield was a little bit of adjustment. They just put in new turf. So that one chopper where they struggled to turn that double play, he was saying it could have been like the turf, like slowing it down.
Yeah, and that one we can let go. But by the way, to address what you're saying, I completely get it, because it does feel like the Yankees tend to get the guy at second base and then Anthony Rizzo just kind of puts his glove up. Yeah. The dude just easily safe at first base. And that's just kind of the way the Yankees play baseball defensively in the infield. Yeah. But if you look at a roster construction, just from a standpoint of hitting into double plays, we'll start there. You need to be fleet of foot to run out these double plays. Look at our lineup. Now, this is a lineup that we've said is very good. We love this lineup. It's the reason we say they're one of, if not the best team in baseball. It's not just because they know how to pitch and because of Matt Blake. No, it's because these guys know how to hit, right? Yeah. Some of these pickups like Verdugo, Soto, they've been excellent. But how many of those guys can run? Now, I'm not saying this is a huge issue. Jake's saying this is an issue. You're saying this is an issue. And there might be many people who believe that that's a very valid point and a reason as to why this team can't win the World Series. But for me personally, I'm going to basically pick my battles. Okay. I'm going to say, if we're a team that can pitch, and I believe when Gerrit Cole comes back, this team can pitch. Okay. Check that box. You have to be able to do that to win a World Series. We got it.
Can this
team hit? Yes.
They absolutely
based on the depth this team has, they absolutely shouldn't have as much of an issue scoring runs as they have in the past in the postseason, because a lot of people tend to forget this lineup is the reason we haven't won a World Series. Mm. It's the reason we haven't won an American League pennant is the lineup. We've scored one. We scored two. A lot of those Astros games that we blamed on the trash cans and the buckets and all this, the wiring, we scored a run in like two of those games. So if you want to come back and say, why did we lose those games? I tend to look at our inability to swing at strikes, to command the zone, and our inability to essentially get clutch hits, come through when it matters, guys in scoring position, right? But yeah, as far as hitting into double plays, when you look at this lineup, it does make a lot of sense why we ground into double plays. If Anthony Volpe hits a ball on the ground with a man on first base, he has a genuine opportunity to leg it out, and most likely he will. And that's what the tape has shown, is that he's had that ability. But look on down the rest of the lineup. Soto, Judge, Rizzo, Torres, Verdugo, Cabrera, Wells, and Grisham. Which one of those guys is fast?
I think Soto's decent. Soto's decently average speed. I think Judge is average speed. I think Rizzo is not, he is not going to beat out any double play. Torres doesn't run super fast.
Torres is, well, first off, Glaber's not running out anything. So, no. And that's not, that has nothing to do with why he's on the team. That's not his role. His role is not to be Anthony Volpe and spray the ball the other way. And now the coach is saying, okay, well, we can get him in the scoring position here and set up Soto's at bat. That's not the way Gleyber Torres plays baseball. He's a producer of runs. Well, that's a really good asset to have for a lot of teams in baseball, including the Yankees. Yeah. But it doesn't help you prevent double plays. But as far as the defense, I think right now this Yankees team is pretty weak defensively at third base and second base. I think Rizzo will be fine, to be quite honest with you. I know he's been playing atrocious, but the bats come alive. I think in general, he feels like he's contributing now, like no doubt about it. And he'll get better defensively. I get he's aging, but I'm not worried about him per se, because he has a long-term pass of being great defensively. But who doesn't, right? Who doesn't have a long-term pass? Gleyber Torres and Cabrera at third base. Cabrera has been excellent offensively, but there's drawbacks to putting him at third base. One of those drawbacks is that you're not going to get the best defense. Maybe he can be league average and that'll work. But a lot of teams in Major League Baseball, they don't just say, we got a league average guy at third, we got a league average guy at second base defensively, and then now we're preventing runs in the World Series. Like it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if guys are good defensively and they're hitting the way these guys can hit, I mean, they're superstars, to be quite honest with you. So,
yeah, you're not going to be able to keep them on your roster. No, I get that part. I think really, like, I mean, I've already talked about it, like, on the other episode, you know, that I did last night. And I want to actually get your thoughts real quick, because, I mean, I'm still somewhat bitter about that loss, way more so than today. Today, they didn't play well, whatever. They should have won yesterday. Like, I understand they're going to probably lose 10 games like that this year. But, you know, my biggest issue is you have runners on second and third. There's no force out. How does Boone not walk the bases loaded? And then to make matters worse, you do infield in. So you go infield in without that force. So now Glaber is out of position, who also just hasn't really been playing well in the field regardless. But now he's
put
out
a decision into his hands of the fielder. You don't want to do that. Anytime you're going to talk about, I mean, we both would describe Gleyber Torres as an average to below average defensive second baseman. Yeah. Now, when you're talking, and then I literally just named two guys and probably three right now who are playing below average defense in the infield. But having said that, you want to take the decisions out of their hands. Exactly. When they're not making proper choices and they're not making the plays. If best case scenario as an infield is that when the ball's hit to me, my job is to field the ball and to throw the ball. But anytime you leave a guy on third and second and you don't walk the bases loaded, essentially what you do, and we saw this in Arizona with Anthony Rizzo, the game is playing a little fast on him. You know, he's settled down a little bit, but there was a ground ball off. Remember, Stroman was on the mound. And he gets a ground ball to first base. And they said, well, it seemed like Rizzo, he was a little sped up. He didn't know if he was going home. He was trying to make a read. And it forced him into a mistake. part of coaching is putting your guys in position where they aren't going to have an opportunity to make those mistakes. If they boot a ball, we'll just find somebody else that can go make the play. But when you put decisions on their plate that's making the job harder than what it needs to be, then maybe we can take a look at it and analyze it.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, you know, yesterday they don't turn the double play. Volpe bobbles it, you know, the return or whatever, and then doesn't get it over to Rizzo. And you're trading a run for two outs. So if you don't get those two outs, then that's a net negative, in my opinion. Getting one out for one run is not a fair trade. So, you know, in that game now it's a, you know, a one run lead, and you have runners on second and third, and you don't walk the bases loaded, and now you go infield in. So he's out of position. The ball, it's a tough play, mainly because he's out of position. I think it's an easy play, but also think about this. If they're walked in and it's bases loaded and that same hit happens and he's in position, even if he's not, he was in time. The throw was in time. The tag was not, because it's not a force. So that still irks me today, because they blew that game. And also, I'll say this, I don't think they lose that game if Clay Holmes stays in for a second inning. And I understand why he didn't. They just used him. I'm sorry. I Caleb Ferguson has to be better, but I don't know if I'm taking out Clay Holmes the way he's been pitching. I know that sounds crazy to say. I feel good when he's in there right now. Will that change potentially? Yeah, I'll probably go through
Packers. I don't know. Has there ever been a player with more of a variance in opinion than Holmes closing these games? If you ask people, and I tell you right now, my DMs on Twitter are flooded with, take this dude off the mound. Hey, what's he doing not on the mound? Why'd they pull him, to your point, right? It seems like there is no consensus. The consensus we had on Mariano Rivera, we don't have that with Holmes. And he's pitching really good. People tend to forget.
Clay Holmes has a zero ERA. He has not allowed a run. He has a 1.13 whip. He has six strikeouts. So six strikeouts in eight innings. He's been more effective. He hasn't been like the strikeout guy that he's been in the past, but he's been more effective. He's been getting ground balls, light, you know, softly hit ground balls. He's been really good. And, you know, I got to give him props, because I said it on this show, and I will always admit when I'm wrong. Just like, Trevino just hit well yesterday. I'm not going to be like, oh, he's still, you know, he's trash, whatever. But I think, like, with Clay Holmes taking him out in that spot, that was brutal. And the reason why I bring it up, Gary, is because I think it affected them today. You know, I think, unfortunately, they let their loss yesterday beat them again today. They looked really uninspired. And I get it. I mean, look, you know, human element, you're coming off a 10 inning game. You have a chance to sweep another series. And I mean, Cleveland is a team that there's kind of an unspoken rivalry there. You know, there just is. I mean, if you've been at the stadium when they play Cleveland, fans absolutely hate Cleveland. I mean, the whole thing with Miles Straw in the outfield, I think there's real, like, decent bad blood there. And then you had in the postseason when Naylor was doing this. I hate that guy.
In Cleveland, if you lived in Cleveland, you would hate everything too. Yeah. I tell you right now, I've been to Cleveland visiting.
It's not, no. Mm-mm.
Not much to do.
But what I will say is that I do think that there is that kind of unspoken rivalry. And, you know, I think that affected them today. And I could be wrong. I also, you know, mentioned before we even, you know, recorded tonight, I texted you during the game. I was like, I hope they didn't mess with Luis' heel, you know, pushing his start. And it's like, to your point, you had mentioned, we don't have enough of a sample size to really know if this messed with anything. But at the same time, couldn't that also be the argument? Like, he literally is so green that doing this might have actually screwed him up. And, you know, I just I didn't think he had his stuff today for whatever reason. But the Yankees, at the end of the day, when you look at this game, the Yankees didn't deserve to win it. And I don't think the Blue Jays deserved to win it. I think the only one who deserved to win it was Chris Bassitt. He's the only one that really deserved to win this game, and Alejandro Kirk.
You could probably make the argument that if you ask Boone, and at some point we'll have Boone on the show and we'll ask him these type of questions. Heel is somebody that they are trying to massage back into the rotation. Okay. He's somebody who's off of an injury, and that makes total sense. We get it. Especially the way you're seeing injuries in baseball today. The Yankees probably would say, we wouldn't hesitate to give somebody off an injury an extra day, regardless of how it might mess up just their, you can't say their chemistry, whatever it is. If physical, all the physical stuff, all the physical tools are more important than what's going on, you know, between his ears. And that's fine. In my opinion, that's fair. I wasn't upset with Heel having an extra day. Maybe it throws him off. Maybe it doesn't. Because my priority is keeping him healthy, because we need those innings. We got those today. And one thing I will say, and this is probably my biggest takeaway about this team overall. I know everyone's looking at our record and how sexy it is, us being 12-5, 12-6, whatever we are. It makes you feel, we're 12-5, makes you feel really good. But having said that, if you look at when the Yankees lose and when the Yankees win, we win when our bats show up. And our bats are showing up much more often. We lay eggs much less often than we ever did. And so my conclusion to that is that Matt Blake and Brian Cashman, since we don't really love to give him credit, I like to criticize some of the moves he's made, but he's also made some good ones as well. He's snuck in a lot of underrated moves as far as the mound goes. So having said that, we're going to pitch well this year, regardless. Unless guys are just dropping like flies with injuries, we're going to get our outs. And even then, with injuries, we're probably going to get our outs anyway. Our issue has always been, in my humble opinion, we need to score. And you can kind of watch in the fourth and fifth inning, and they go into the bullpen, and you say, okay, let's see what type of at-bats they work here. And then they lay down out number one, out number two, and you say, okay. It's one of those days. It was just one of those days. It didn't look like, and I know it's baseball, it can turn on its head at any point, but the way the game looked, it looked over already. And so that just happens. We saw it in the 7-0 D-backs game. We saw it tonight. Yesterday was a different story. Of course, it's baseball. But my takeaway again, if we score, we're going to win. Heel kept us in the game. We didn't score. We lost. So my thing is, tomorrow we just need to show up with the sticks. Let's go.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, I want to add, because I played devil's advocate with the two things that concern me. But I also want to add something that potentially it could be a sign that this team is about to be even more dominant than we've seen. The Yankees, I don't know if you're aware of this. The Yankees are not top five. We keep talking about how well they're hitting. The Yankees are not top five team statistics in any offensive category. Not batting average, not home runs, not RBIs, not stolen bases, not hits. Is that crazy? They're number one in wins, which we know because they lead the league. They are number two in ERA, and they have the most saves in the league. So their closer's been dominant. He's been lights out. When you see Holmes, well, shit, the game's over.
Yeah,
that's pretty much been that. You know, Holmes has had his shaky moments, but it was way early on in the year. He's been pretty dominant since. Earned run average, the Yankees have a 2.78 ERA, and that's without Gerrit Cole. That's with starting. I mean, could you call Heel a rookie? He's not technically a rookie because he's pitched in the bigs before, but he's pretty much a rookie. He's a rookie starter. That's pretty much what we'll call him. A young pitcher in Clark Schmidt, you know? I mean, I've been really impressed with the pitching, to your point. And once again, as bad as this looked like it was going to be, they only ended up giving up 3 runs. And what's
even... You told me this, I thought Heel was coming out in the second inning.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was coming out. I was sitting there thinking, well, what is Boone doing? Because again, I'm a hindsight Hank. So is everybody watching the show. So is Jake. We don't have to live with the decisions that we make. We can just show up on the podcast and talk about it and say, hey, I got that wrong. Well, guess what? The manager doesn't have that opportunity. He has to live with the actual results of what happened. Guys can get hurt because of your decisions. Guys can become Cy Young winners because of your decisions. You can win a World Series because of those decisions. So having said all that, Aaron Boone had a decision in the second inning, and Heel was absolute butt water. He didn't know where anything was going, including his best pitch, his fastball. So having said that, you could easily make the argument that Boone could have pulled Heel in the second inning. I probably would have. I knew from the get-go, hey, this guy, he does not have his stuff, and to Boone's credit, and this is why he's in the position that he's in and I'm not, he had the ability to say Heel's stuff when it's not right can get us through five. That was the decision he made today, and the Yankees will reap the rewards. They will. Over the course of the season, whether or not we won this game, so be it. We lose this game, teams lose. Look at the best teams in the history of baseball. They all lose 60 games a year at least. Okay? So having said that, I said my biggest concern with this team was our ability to score two things, our ability to score and our ability to eat up innings with our starters. Aaron Boone made a decision at the beginning of this year. He was going to grind innings regardless of how it looked. He's doing it. It, in my opinion, going to help us later.
No, I definitely agree with that. I think there's some statistical outputs that are really kind of showing you what this team is, what their identity is early on in the season. And I still feel like the home runs aren't even there because I feel like they're probably coming as well. It doesn't seem like they're hitting as many. They have 19. They're in eighth team-wise.
We are?
Eighth. Isn't that crazy? You don't think about it.
I feel like
it.
I've seen five all year. Yeah. I swear to you.
No,
I feel like
I know,
I've seen five.
They don't hit them as frequently. You know why? Because they're walking so much. They have 10 more walks than the next team. Is that crazy? They have 10 more walks than the Pirates. 84 walks this year. And by the way, strikeouts, which is a big thing. Everyone freaks out. Oh my God, home runner strikeout. Well, this team's not that because they're hitting 19 home runs. They've only struck out 120 times, which is good for fifth in the league. Fewest strikeouts. You know, and so you look at that and you're like, okay, team batting average 252, that's 10th in the league. You know, on base percentage, they're third. Team on base percentage, they're third in the league right now. This is with Judge starting off as poorly as he did. They're seventh in OPS, team OPS.
Let's also remember teams just lay eggs on given days. Would this surprise you to tell you that I'm watching right now? The Washington Nationals beat Tyler Glasnow in LA. He's given up three runs already and is 2 2/3 of an inning's work. So we're sitting here going, geez, what's wrong with Luis Heel? He just has no control. He doesn't seem like he knows where it's going today. And the Dodgers' literal ace of the entire organization is just getting shelled by Washington. So I say that to say this, not to talk about the Dodgers. I say this to make a point. Sometimes guys just don't have it on a given day. All that matters in baseball, where there's 162 freaking baseball games, is that overall, who are you on a day in and day out basis? Who are you? And the Yankees right now are a amazing organization on the mound. We can work at bats better than any other team in baseball, and we'll pick our spots leaving the yard. Defensively, we have our woes. And you see the results. When you have all those things going for you and you have those flaws, it leaves you at 12-5. So if we can improve on some of the things that definitely are our Achilles heel right now, the league is in trouble. I'm here to tell you right now, when Gerrit Cole comes back, the fact that, Jake, you can name those numbers, okay, about this staff and what Matt Blake's done with this staff and this cast, it shows me that Gerrit Cole doesn't have to be rushed back. Gerrit Cole, you don't have to sit him on the shelf either. He can do what's absolutely best for him physically, because physically, if Gerrit Cole is on the mound for game one and in a playoff series with this lineup that can take these type of at-bats overall in a series, I believe this team is better than any of the teams so far we've seen in baseball. Baltimore, of course, can narrow the gap and possibly surpass us. You never know. It's all a matter of who's hot, but situationally, if you're looking at this team and you feel like we don't have a chance, I don't know what you're watching.
Yeah, I mean, opponent's batting average against the Yankees, you know, they're second in the league, right? Opponents are hitting 217. And it kind of goes to show you, I think the thing about Matt Blake that is so misunderstood is that people just assume if you're talking about a pitching coach, then that whole rotation is just throwing gas and they're just striking guys out left and right. And that's really not the case. They're 22nd strikeouts of the 128. That's fine because strikeouts are overrated. They are. Getting soft ground balls are just as good as actually they're better than strikeouts because strikeouts mean at the minimum you just threw three pitches. If you can just get ground balls all game, you can eat innings. And it
maybe
only
that's
makes
why them, we're doing what we're doing.
I think that's what it is, man.
Would
because
you look
I think,
at that.
Think about this. The approach of the bullpen, right? What's the approach of the bullpen when they come in? They want to get soft ground balls, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Well, if you have that same approach as starters and you're, you know, getting through the minimum and you're getting seven innings done, now you're keeping the bullpen fresh and the bullpen's doing that, then they're keeping other guys fresh behind them. And it, you really kind of have to pitch that way if you're going to, you know, essentially deploy your bullpen the way the Yankees do very aggressively. I don't think anybody uses their bullpen the way the Yankees do. Now I know baseball is catching up with that in general, but yeah, I mean, I think that's a real thing. And by the way, to add on to your Tyler Glasnow comment, the Dodgers who stole Yamamoto from the Yankees, they traded for Glasnow. They have all these, you know, big names. They have a 4.28 ERA right now. They're winning games because they hit more home runs than anybody else. Pretty
yeah,
much
the, fair.
Yeah, but pretty much the way you would have expected. Mm-hmm. However, that's not sustainable. And if they don't figure out the pitching and say this is how it is the whole year, that is a team that you're looking at like that could be on upset alert come postseason.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Dodgers look at it and say, well, the one thing that we knew for certain we were going to have for us is we were going to rake. Okay, we wake up in April, we're going to rake. I'll see you in October or September, I should say, for the Dodgers' sake, we're going to rake. But as far as the mound, you can just go ahead and assume, yeah, okay, Glasnow, Yamamoto. Some people did say, I think Yamamoto is going to take some time to get prepared for the big leagues. And I think you can see some of those growing pains that he's having in terms of control. But
yeah.
I'm sure they're looking at it saying,
yeah, he's yeah, going to be really
when these two
good.
Guys
I'm
are
not,
gone, they're going to be gross.
I wouldn't be concerned about him. But yeah, how about Colorado Rockies with a ERA that I've never seen for a team before? Can you guess?
5?
No.
6.9. 6.29. Show's over. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. 4-12 on the year, a 6.29 ERA, and a team high. Leading the league by a margin there, 1.75 whip. Opponent's batting average is 300. The Yankees.
Okay, so let's be clear here. Okay, for our audience, and we have some of the best audience with really, really excellent viewer retention. You guys actually stick around for the whole show, so I appreciate you guys so much. Yeah. I want to describe to you what that means in Colorado. Essentially what you're seeing in Colorado and their ace in Kyle Freeland is that second you see a Colorado Rockies pitcher on the mound, you immediately and expeditiously turn into Tony Gwynn. That's what is happening. Based on those numbers that you just gave me, I'm not even offering an opinion yet. He essentially is turning players, not just he's probably the best guy that they've got. And they're giving up runs like that. That slugfest loaded MVP baseball 05 numbers makes no sense. And I get it. It's Colorado, not easy to pitch. But guys, only half their games are played there. Half.
Oh my God, dude. It gets worse. So I just went on the Colorado Rockies main page on ESPN. First thing, Rockies starting pitcher Freeland injured on base paths, but okay.
Oh, he pinch ran today. Could you imagine if...
Are they trying to win games? I don't think so, right?
I almost just had a brain aneurysm right there. Could you imagine if Luis Gil or Garrett Cole or Marcus Stroman, they're like, ah, Boone just throws him out to pinch run, and they're like, just send him around second base over to third, and he pulls a hamstring?
Who's the manager for the Rockies?
I have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... Kyle Freeland has a 13.21 ERA with a 2.55 whip.
2.55? 255.
Oh, it doesn't end there. So
it should.
No, because Cal Quantrill, their big signing this offseason, I believe.
Yes, okay.
He's given up 4 home runs.
Okay.
And he has a 5.57 ERA.
Pretty good.
Like, that's considered good on the team. Oh, Ryan Feltner has a 3.38 ERA. He should just pitch every day.
He should be the Pablo Sanchez of that organization.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. A tired Ryan Feltner, is he going to do that much worse than a 13.21 ERA?
Wait, who's got a 13.2?
No, a 13.21. That's Kyle Freeland.
He.
Oh, you didn't hear that. Okay.
His ERA is 13.21.
Yeah, his ERA is 13.21, and he's pitched 15.2 innings. His ERA is almost as much as his innings. Yeah, it's
that's not even baseball.
No, it's not great in Colorado. It's actually not really acceptable. I feel bad for the fans, you know? That's tough. They get to see Ryan McMahon, though, so I guess that's good. He's, you know, doing well this year.
Love his swing.
Yeah. Michael Toglia has 4 home runs. So, you know, getting some home runs out there. But, yeah, they're, believe it or not, they have won 4 games this year, which is, I don't know how they've won 4, but they have.
Pretty good in that division.
They beat the Blue Jays 12-4.
It's a good performance. That's why I always tell people, you can't get freaked out watching, because yesterday's performance was super frustrating. I know you just said that you were thinking about it today, and then they came in today, it looked kind of the same. It was buns. It didn't feel good. But these type of things happen to great teams. Is you just kind of lay down. So
absolutely, but you can't make it a 3-game losing streak. Like, I think tomorrow is
figured out.
Tomorrow's a must win. So let's talk about tomorrow real quick before we wrap this thing up. Because
we have to talk about Sterling before we go, though.
Yes, we'll talk about Sterling and tomorrow. Let's do tomorrow real quick. Mm-hmm. Carlos Rodon versus Kikuchi. So,
oh, Kabuti.
Yeah, well, he wasn't the last time he faced the Yankees.
He's gonna Kabuti on us.
Yeah, apparently. So the odds are the Yankees are favored to win.
Okay.
But ESPN's matchup predictor has the Blue Jays winning 56.4% of the time via their simulator. I think the Yankees are winning tomorrow. I think Rodon is going to shove, but I also think Kikuchi is going to shove, and I think it's going to come down to a late game heroic. And I think coming off a game like this where the bats weren't able to really get going, I think they're going to eat against this bullpen, which they should have done tonight. They didn't have it. I think they'll have it tomorrow. I expect like Soto, Volpe, Judge, that type of thing going on late in the game. I think the Yankees win 2-1. I think it's going to be like another.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be another duel. Like pitcher's duel. Yeah. I mean, not that today was really a pitcher's duel, but you get
which, according to the context clues, that's a fair assessment. I mean, we didn't hit Kabuti last time. He was really good.
Yeah.
So you have to give him credit.
He's been really good this year. I mean, 2.30 ERA. Rodon, 1.72. You know, he's actually struck out 7 more batters than Rodon, which is kind of surprising. But
I love that we're looking at Rodon now. So this is my favorite thing about Rodon.
Yeah.
Is when he gets on the mound. I remember doing this when Gerrit Cole became a Yankee too. I said, let's just start counting the strikeouts. This is going to be easy and fun. But now I care about innings, which I never did before. So now when I look at Rodon, if he starts coming out of games in the 6th and the 7th and maybe even the 8th inning, maybe if he went CG in a game, I think I might run through this brick wall behind me.
Have every right to, though. I mean, you know, I also, by the way, tomorrow, Gary, I think I would assume Giancarlo Stanton will be in the lineup. Right.
100%.
He's not going to have another day off, is he?
No, you can book it. He's going deep. I don't care what anybody says.
I think he does as well.
He's hitting a ball at least 112 tomorrow. It could be for an out, could be for a double that goes through the wall, or it could be to the third deck into Drake's house. Telling you guys.
Reminded me, by the way, why I was so bitter about yesterday. It's because our guy, Clase, and how dominant he is Volpe was able to hit that. And I just thought that was such an important, you know, at bat for Volpe's career to show, look, like, that was a postseason at bat. That's what it mm-hmm. felt like in that moment. I mean, it's very real. The Yankees end up playing the Guardians again in the postseason. Okay. Very real. And Class A was like what you're going to see in the postseason. Very feared pitcher on the mound, feared hitter at the plate. Who's going to win? And Volpe really stepped into the shoes of a feared hitter. And that's what I feel like he is now.
They did that with Rodon. Remember, Rodon went and dominated. And what did they say, Jake? They said, oh, he did it against Miami. Doesn't really count. Did it against yep. Tim Anderson and those guys. Jake Berger. Doesn't count. Gary doesn't count. We're not going to count it. Well, yeah. Do you count Class A in Anthony Volpe's development? Because I sure as hell do.
Yeah. Max T. Goodman on Twitter. I sent this mm-hmm. to you. According yep. to Aaron Judge, hitting an Emmanuel Class A cutter is damn near impossible. That's the greatest quote I've ever heard.
Yep.
Anthony Volpe turned a 100.4 mile per hour cutter from Class A into a game tying double in the ninth yesterday. Just the 29th extra base hit anyone has had against that pitch against Class A since 2021. So that's why I think that's really why I was so bitter about losing that, because that felt like that was a big pivotal moment to do that. Then to get Class A out of the game and you lose. How do you hit Class A and then lose to I think it was Beattie? Like, how? Come on.
It should be batting practice after that at that yeah. point.
But anyway,
you'd like to believe they'd ride that momentum to a win, but you know, like, baseball's hard, man. It's just sometimes it's just stupid. That's why they play 162 games. Everyone asks me all the time, hey Gary, when do you think they'll shorten the baseball season? Never.
Never.
Reason being is because great teams will just show up to the yard and just get their brakes crapped all over by a team that's frankly not as good. But the point is of the 162 games is they designed that so that A, everybody could play in every city, but then also the better teams will separate themselves. They'll kind of weed out these poor performances that every team has, and they'll have enough time to for sure make their stamp on the season. So yeah, I'm just really happy with what this rotation's doing in terms of its innings. The lineup's going to be better tomorrow. Stant's going to hit a ball 115, I'm telling you. And let's go get a win. And then we also need to talk about Sterling. So I've been waiting to talk about this because people have been irking me left and right with this topic about quitting your job on the spot, which is so funny. Can you introduce the situation and make sure that everyone knows the news?
Yes. Yeah, so the news, unfortunately, we bring you, I think it's bittersweet because you got to feel good about a guy who has literally called 5,420 regular season games on top of 211 postseason games and is getting able, he's able to retire like on his own terms. I feel great about that. John Sterling, legendary play-by-play voice for the Yankees, is retiring effective immediately. There was stuff going around that he was retiring because of his health, because I think he missed like a series because he had the flu or whatever. That is not what's happening, because Michael Kay, who is in great communication, for those of you who don't remember, Michael Kay was on the radio with John Sterling for years. And Michael Kay had talked about it on the broadcast today, like, yeah, it's not health related. He just decided one day, he was just like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. Like, I love being in the booth, but I don't love the trip to Yankee Stadium. I don't love the trip back home from Yankee Stadium. Of course, people took that offensively. There are people saying like he's not, you know, a true Yankee because of that, which is ridiculous. He should be in Monument Park. I think we can all agree about that. At least, you know, a plaque of some sort. You know, and in addition to that, Gary, that people were saying that he was quitting and it was scummy that he was quitting on a team this early in the season, a team that could win the World Series. Gary, you and I love doing this, right? But if we were doing this for, say, 40 years and we just decided, you know what, we're going to go ahead, you're 41, right? And yeah, they're 11-5, 11-4, whatever. And you and I just kind of go to ourselves, you know what? I think we're done. And then you're like, yeah, I'm done. You know, I almost flipped my phone over the desk.
He's like, I'm done.
But like There's something beautiful about that. And I think as creators, because, I mean, John's creating content, whether people realize it or not, like that stuff that's played back all the time. He's got, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think some of his stuff was a little corny, but I think it was fun, you know? You know, some of those home run calls. That is content. He is a content creator. He is also, I mean, essentially a journalist by voice. He is, you are not at the game, and his job is to bring you into Yankee Stadium, even if you're not there and you're on the road, or even some people I know, they don't even watch the Yankee broadcast. They'll put it on, but they mute it and put John Sterling on because they love, you know, him and Susan Waldman. He deserves that. He deserves the credit. It's a remarkable career. And to me, anyone that thinks that a diehard Yankee fan that has essentially given his whole radio career to this organization, and again, has called over 5,600 baseball games. That's nine innings or more.
Do people realize he's 86 in July?
Apparently not.
Let me say, trust me when I tell you, I have never in my life struggled so hard not to interrupt. Let me say one thing. Could you imagine if you were a random worker in the workplace and you are an agent for State Farm, and you just decided on a random Thursday, which is exactly what it will be at the end of all of our work careers. And most people retire about 65, I would say.
Yeah.
Most people retire at age 65. Some people work into their 70s. But on a random Thursday, they just decide, I've had enough. And what's so interesting about this decision that we all rightfully make as Americans and members of society is that absolutely nobody is sitting at our desk going, geez, that's awfully selfish of you. I don't give a rat's ass what you think about my retirement. It's his life. In case you guys didn't realize, we only have so many years on this earth, okay? These are jobs we're talking about. This is not like some WWE we're just screwing around, and even those are jobs.
Yeah.
This is not make-believe. This guy in John Sterling was doing a job to the point where he was doing it so well, whether you like him or not, he was doing well enough for enough people that he could decide when he wanted to quit. We will never have that opportunity. Us normal folk won't have that opportunity. So when people say that they hated his decision, that's not what they hated. They hated the fact that Sterling had the opportunity to quit when he was ready. And that's their problem. Has nothing to do with him. He worked his tail off for all this time for Yankees baseball. And I'll tell you one more thing. A lot of people look at Yankee Stadium and they see on Twitter that people are, I'm going to spend some money, put some money aside, go with my dad. I'm going to go to the game with my mom and my stepdad. We're going to make a trip of it. Guess what, guys? A lot of people can never afford to go to Yankee Stadium. But you know what they can afford? They can afford to listen to him. And his energy is what makes people a fan, okay? You never know who's going to make people a fan. I promise you, as crazy as this sounds, our Yankee show at some point or another is going to literally create out of thin air, a Yankees fan. Sterling's done that with his work. And hopefully, Jake, at the end of our careers as YouTube creators and content creators, which you just made the point, John Sterling is most definitely a content creator. If we're lucky enough to be able to quit on the spot, we've done something right. So congratulations to him. And he's lived a long life already. He's, like I said, 86 in July. He needs to go enjoy his life and hopefully not watch too many double play balls, because maybe that's why he's retiring. He doesn't want to watch us turn double plays anymore.
So
good for him.
No, absolutely. I mean, there are just people just take these guys for granted. I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people do. And, you know, I think like with Sterling, You see him in the booth every now and then if you're watching the TV broadcast. If you don't listen to the radio, you don't hear him, you know. But the thing that I always kind of look at is just think about Bob Shepard, you know, with the Yankees. I mean, how long was he with the Yankees now batting Derek Jeter? Everyone knows it. And like when he would come up to the plate after Bob Shepard died, he would have his same audio track playing.
That's right.
With Bob Shepard, which I always thought was really cool. I mean, he started having health issues. I believe he was 95 and he injured his hip and he ended up basically retiring from that spot with the Yankees. And I mean, he passed away 4 years later and it was like, you know, right before his 100th birthday. And it's like everyone was understanding of that. But to your point, and I understand Shepard was older, but we're talking about, you know, what, he's 95 at that point. Sterling's 86. And it's like, you know, Shepard's in the Hall of Fame. At least his microphone is in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's in the Hall. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He was fantastic. But like, for whatever reason, Sterling is getting some sort of blowback. And it's weird to me. Very weird.
We don't have to mention his age, by the way, as to means to retire. Let's be clear. He's retiring because he's 86. I mean, he's an older man, and he has the right to make that decision. But here's the crazy thing. Michael Kay could retire tomorrow. And I speak highly on Michael Kay pretty much every other day on this show, right? Yeah. Will I critique some of the stuff? And will me and him have our one-on-one banter together? Absolutely, we will. But let me say this. If Michael Kay, after his amazing career with the Yankees, if he decided tomorrow that he wants to spend time with his kids, he wants to spend time with his wife, you know what I would say? I would clap and be done with it. I would be happy for what happened and I would move on. That's what this stuff is. These are content creators making a living and they love this team. But a lot of people make real life decisions and decide this is just something I can't do any longer. And he decided, literally effective immediately, my last day was behind me. I am done doing what I was doing. I've given everything that I could give. And if it wasn't enough of what he gave and he needed to give you more after the age of 86, you message me and then I'll deal with you.
No, I agree, man. I mean, obviously way less of a, you know, a comparison, but you know, I just, my job before I quit and started doing content full time, I just had this, you know, feeling. I was like, I just really, and I told my boss, I was like, with all due respect, and I think you were fantastic, big reason why I stayed as long as I did, I don't think I can work another minute here.
Where were you working?
I don't want to say, you know, to ruin their reputation or anything, but I was working basically selling window shades for a living. And
you didn't want to retire at 98 and give everything to that company?
No, I worked for 4 years. It was funny. I was going to put in my 2 weeks and my grandpa, who ended up passing away, I visited him and, you know, took care of him. We went to Florida, my dad and I, and, you know, he was dealing with brain cancer. And I'll never forget one of the most like in-depth conversations we've ever had while he's fighting brain cancer. And this is a guy who had made a lot of money and, you know, he'd worked his tail off and was like the business guy. And he tells me, he's like, why are you putting in your 2 weeks? If you know you don't want to work there, just quit. There's nothing wrong with it. And at that moment,
it's the most true thing ever.
At that moment, because I had always been raised, not like by my parents, but just, you know, the outside around me, like, you have to put in your 2 weeks, right? And at that moment, I was like, wow, I don't feel like I have to put my 2 weeks in anymore. So I got home from Florida, called up my boss at like 7 a.m. My shift is at 8, and I told her, and she was totally accepting of it. She supported it, and she thanked me for, you know, all the time that I had spent there. And she said I was a good dude and everything. And, you know, it's just funny because there it is. I just quit. I literally couldn't handle it, and I quit as soon as I got back from vacation.
See you later, guys.
Big thanks to my grandpa. But that's what it reminds me of, and that's why it's like when people are like, how did he come to this situation? The Yankees are so good so far. It's like, this is going to be like a World Series year. Doesn't he want to be a part of it? It's like, well, he's been a part of World Series before.
But he's like, also still, guys, you're acting like if he decides he's retiring from the Yankees. Or
he's not a Yankee fan anymore. Like, he just grew up a Yankee fan. No, but,
are you kidding me? Guys, let me ask you a question. For you, no, not you, Jake. You in the audience right now watching the show, do you feel like you're going to get an opportunity to enjoy a Yankees World Series win? Well, don't you think John Sterling will?
Yeah.
Sitting on the sidelines watching it. Give me a freaking break. He doesn't need to be calling the games to enjoy what's kind of cool on the table.
Come is
on.
That he and Michael Kay are really good friends. I bet you he hasn't really watched much of Michael Kay's broadcast because he's always working.
Oh, no. So yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be kind of cool that he can support him from the sidelines. And again, making the trek to Yankee Stadium, I get it, man. The traffic's awful. You know,
they wouldn't even take me in an Uber to Yankee Stadium. I went from MLB Network Studio in Jersey. And they Ubered me to the Bronx, and four different Ubers were like, "Nah, I'm not dropping you off over there." And I was like, "What do you mean? Oh, I didn't realize this is a thing. I'm from the West Coast. I didn't know this was happening." I've got great tickets. I'm trying to go to this game. And they said, "Oh, it's because we're having a battle with the Ubers and the taxi riders. So they don't want us in the city or in the Bronx." And I was like, "Okay, so what now?" They're like, "Oh, I'm just going to have to cancel the ride." So I just sat on the side of the freaking road in Jersey.
Oh my goodness, that's ridiculous.
No one can make that make sense. So yeah, New York is a hassle in some way. You know, right? Yeah. Everyone's like, it's so easy. You just get on the train. I'm like, yeah, and just get mugged. Great idea.
Like the train's not that bad, but no, I know what you're saying.
They're like, you can just get on the train at 2 o'clock in the morning. It'll be great. Just by yourself.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you're absolutely out of your mind. no, but props to John Sterling. Congratulations. Yeah. Huge career. Amazing. And enjoy it. Just enjoy the rest of your life. And hopefully, this team can win you a World Series.
And I want to throw this out there. I thought it was cool. The broadcaster for the Angels, Wayne Randazzo, had a nod to John Sterling on a Mike Trout home run. He said, "It is high, it is far, it is gone." I feel like that's really cool. And I also feel like it kind of goes to show you John Sterling, he might not be, you know, totally known by you if you've never listened to Yankees radio, but you've heard of him everywhere, all over the country. His broadcasts have gone viral. He's the only one that's doing those calls. No one is going to, I mean, if they do them, it's going to be a clear copy of John Sterling.
You've got to have balls to be different today.
His home run calls were very different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are some ones that are like, I always thought it was funny. I got a kick out of the 40-year-old Ichiro hitting a home run. The rising sun says sayonara. It's like the rising sun. He's 40 years old.
He's taking risk. And in this genre where everyone's clipping everything and trying to, this is an L, this is a W. People are afraid to take risk. I know a lot of times in this content creation world, a lot of people will say, well, it's easy to feel confident. It's easy to feel, feel good in what you do. But if you pay any attention to and Yankees have more fans than anybody else. They also have more people criticizing you than anybody else. So it's very easy to doubt who you are and what you do. People in this organization have been under fire before. We saw it with Joey Gallo. Obviously, we see it with Michael Kay, highly scrutinized report. He's highly scrutinized. A lot of people don't realize that. These jobs are not easy.
No. Okay. If you choose to just toe the line, okay. But, you know, it's one thing when you actually step over it and you cross it. And that's the thing. Michael Kay is not afraid to do that. You know,
he's not.
Talked about Ohtani, got a lot of blowback for that. SNY booth also giving praise to John Sterling. He was one of a kind and we love him. So there's a lot of people that really liked him, and he just seems like a genuine guy. I've never met him, obviously, but, 1989 is when he called his first game with the Yankees. Fun fact, by the way, Bob Shepard, his first game, Gary, get this, his first season with the Yankees, he called it in 1956, I believe.
Oh, so that's close to when when Vin Scully called his first game.
Yeah, so he was the announcer of the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees front office immediately wanted him after he delivered a tribute to Babe Ruth at a Dodgers football game. He was offered the Yankees announcing job, did not accept it until 3 years later when the Yankees hired an understudy. He debuted at Yankee Stadium on 1951 home opener, 5-0 win over the Red Sox. And his first year as the Yankees announcer was the only one in which Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle shared the outfield. Is that crazy?
That's old.
Yeah.
That's so, the first thing I thought about. That is old.
That is, that team had Rizzuto, Yogi Berra. I mean, Ted Williams played in that game.
Oh my gosh.
How lucky, man.
Like I said. No, I mean, incredibly lucky. And that's the thing is, a lot of us don't realize we're going to be talking about Aaron Judge like Ted Williams in 40 years. And
by the way,
are
you know
looking
what
at
is,
us going,
his,
what's up?
His salary per game.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let me guess it. Whose?
Bob Shepard's back in 51.
Per game?
Per game. It's atrocious. I hate it.
Is it $25 a game?
It is $15 a game.
Oh, I was so close.
Which is the equivalent of 176 in 2023.
$166? He can pretty much go to five guys once and they'd punch you in the face until you leave.
Oh, he got $17 for a doubleheader. Equivalent to $200 in 2023.
Inflation's out of control.
Yeah, that's basically what we learned from that. But yeah, Bob Shepard, legend. John Sterling, legend. I'm glad we're talking about John Sterling in a way where, you know, he's still alive and well and gets to retire on top, and that's great. And hopefully the same is with Michael Kay, who I think can mm-hmm. be up there. I think that there's no reason to say that John Sterling won't be in Monument Park. They're honoring him on Saturday, so I wonder if they put something in Monument Park or they announce it.
We'll
but
see.
I think at some point, I think Michael Kay will be that. I mean, I think he's done a great job.
Agree.
I think he's done a great job. He's called some of the biggest things that you could imagine. And I think obviously being in that position, knowing that, you know, Yes Network, you're only going to get coverage until the postseason. He's called some pretty big games considering he can't really call postseason games anymore since he's not on the radio.
Yeah, but you know what's really interesting, though, about Sterling and Kay? Now that you bring it up, I really feel like it's a shock to see these type of personalities in New York. And I know a lot of people say, well, don't you want big personalities in New York? And I think that's true. But having said that, wouldn't you think that New York, being the most scrutinized place you could ever play, being the most scrutinized place you could ever call a game, being the most scrutinized you could ever call a game on the radio. Okay. Nobody will ever pick you apart like a New York crowd will. Now, having said that, you would expect with that fact being true that they would pick people who are very safe, people who took very little risk. You just said Michael Kay brought up Shohei Ohtani, and rightfully so. He has every right to ask questions that he sees fit. Now, you would just expect some of these guys that do these jobs would just sit around and say the obvious and then just call the game and hope we win World Series. And then that'll be enough. But why I believe that these guys could potentially be in Monument Park, which you've brought up, is because they magically have an ability, something inside of them that says, I need to take a risk. I feel like I want to do it this way. And maybe that's why they were hired. And you don't think of it when they first get hired. You kind of think, why Michael Kay when he first gets hired? Like, is it the voice? Is it, you know, what is it about? Is it the way he breaks down the game? And it's really not. The reason that Sterling had the job, the reason Michael Kay has the job and will continue to have this job and will retire the same way Sterling did on top is because they have an ability to just say, I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to do it anyone else's way. Just because that's the safe way doesn't mean it's the best way. So, yeah, I applaud John Sterling. I mean, obviously, he had a great career, but
yeah,
we should all do our jobs the way we want to do it. Of course, you don't want to get fired doing your job, but as long as you know you're doing your job well, put your flavor on it, man. Like, do something different than what these other people are doing. Take a risk and do things the way that you do it. Doesn't have to be exuberant like all these other personalities you see. Doesn't have to be controversial. It's your way. And so I think that's the big takeaway I have.
No, exactly. And by the way, a lot of people don't realize Michael Kay started in 1992 on the radio with John Sterling. So he's 63 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been going at it for a while. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how long he does it. And I mean, his resume is so cool. I mean, think about this. He grew up his whole life. He wanted to be a broadcaster, the Yankees announcer. That was what he wanted to be. And his favorite player was Bobby Mercer. He got to literally call games with his favorite player.
It's the best thing. It is the best thing ever. And
yeah.
Yeah, and I just have no doubt. I just don't have any doubt. I just, everything about it, and I said this about the Mets broadcast as well. I've always felt like they had a really good broadcast. You take a great broadcast, because I'm telling you guys right now, look across the league. Go turn on some of these teams. Like, go turn on, you know, Seattle and Cincinnati. And I'm not saying they have bad broadcasting crews, but when you have a crew that you've grown up watching, go turn on another team and tell me how that makes you feel. Tell me how much that baseball game could drag on. Whereas you turn on Yes Network and you get a different feel.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's just what, in my opinion, what makes it special. It's not just the players, it's the owners, it's the fans, like, it's all these guys. So yeah. Am I sad to see Sterling retire? To be honest with you, I'm not. My opinion on this, and I feel like it's hard to have an opinion on this, but I always have to force it. My opinion is that I'm just going to think about what he did provide. That's it. He provided pure happiness for millions of people with this team. That was his job. I'm sure that's the reason he got into this job, and he did it to the best of his ability.
No, I agree. I think it's very well said. You know, it's like I said, it's bittersweet. It's also a reminder that time is ticking, whether you remember that it's ticking or not. You know how people always be like, wow, they got so old. Yeah, it's been 10 years. You know, but yeah, just a reminder that that's happening. And yeah, win it for John this year. It sure looks like they're a good, very good team, like we're talking about. Should be fun. Tomorrow, we got another show for you guys. Hopefully, we'll be talking after a Carlos Rodon gem. I'm kind of thinking that's what we're getting. I think he found something last game, but we'll see if it continues. Guys, appreciate you as always for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on social media, all social media, at Yankees Unloaded, at Gary Sheffield Jr., and of course myself at JK Bogan. Be sure to like, subscribe, and comment. Hit the bell icon, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Later, folks. And
Gary Sheffield Jr. from his new apartment says, like this video, please.